Rockwell Bibles builds heirloom custom quality Bibles using the finest premium cowhide and goatskin leathers that you won't find in any mass-produced Bible. Each one is handcrafted, and you can customize nearly every detail from the leather type and the stamping to page edges and liners. As a family-owned Christian business in the Ozarks, Adam, coming from a background in mechanical engineering, brings precision and top-tier build quality to every Bible. Whether you want to build a new Bible or extend the life of the one you already use, this is the place to go. Follow Rockwell Bibles on X, Instagram, or on Facebook to see examples of their work. And visit rockwallbibles.com to place a deposit for your custom Bible today. They also drop ready-made Bibles every Friday, but typically sell out quickly, so don't wait. Visit rockwallbibles.com. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. All right, welcome back to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. Hope you guys are having a great day today. This conversation is actually a long time in the making. I'm talking to some friends of mine that I've known now for, I don't know, probably as long as I've been married to Jordan, so it's got to be 15 years or so now. And so this is going to be a fun conversation. We're talking to the founders of Twin Bolt Media. They are, in fact, twins. This is Caleb and Kyler Cook. Guys, how's it going?
Hello. Hello.
You guys ready for some fun?
Yes, sir. And I just want to, at the top, the deep baritone bass voice is Kyler Cook, and the high tenor is Caleb Cook. And that's how you can tell us apart if you're listening by sound. I like to say treble.
Well, thank you for those voice indicators for the listeners. That's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Father, we just thank you for this time. Thank you for Caleb. Thank you for Kyler and their families and all you're doing in their life and the effective ministry that's happening. They're getting to see the fruit of their labors. And I know there's so many things behind the scenes from their work that they've not got to see that you are doing. And we thank you for that work as well, what's seen and unseen. Holy Spirit, I pray you continue to bless Twin Bolt Media. I pray for every short film, every full film that they make, everything that they do. God, I pray that it would have an effect where your kingdom is expanding. We just want, Holy Spirit, to you to use that kind of medium to reach people and to help people. And God, I pray that they would be just submissive to you during the process. God, I pray that they would remember why they're doing it. I thank you for their love for you and their love for their families. And I'm just excited about this conversation. So bless it. Trust you will. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Man, thank you,
Pastor. All right. So we'll start with the baritone voice then over there.
Hello.
And I don't know who could win an arm wrestling competition between you two. We might need to do that live.
That's this guy. I can't beat him.
At 36, I have given up on those meaningless tasks of masculinity, because I would snap my arm backwards in a heartbeat. So that's not me.
Well, who would win in a wrestling match then between you two?
You would, Kyler. Kyler.
Okay. Who would win in a foot race?
Yeah, Kyler. He's just physically dominant.
Okay. Who's got bigger brains then?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, yeah, that's a good question.
Okay. So why don't we go ahead and start with you, Kyler, and tell us a little bit about yourself and your family, and then obviously what you're doing, and maybe the unique things you're doing with Twin Bolt that might be different than what Caleb's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So married to the love of my life, Lauren Cook. She hails from Carmi. I know that there's a big listening audience in the Southern Illinois area. And I was born and raised in El Dorado. So my wife was right there 30 minutes away. And God kept us apart until I was 18. And I met her in the basement of Abby Jean Short at a Bible study. And nice. She Bible study with one of her friends. And I came home, told Caleb I just met the love of my life. She's beautiful. She's so funny. And started dating her whenever I was 19. And so we dated for a little bit. We were married at 22, me, 21, her. And then we have three beautiful children, 8, 6, and 4. And so that's Kaya, that's Elias, and that's Jonas. And that is my lineage. That nice. Is the treasure that God has given me. And it's been amazing. Lauren's full-time helping us with Twin Bolt right now as the director of operations. And so between the two of us, we are all in on this new venture. And life over the last 2 years has been a whirlwind of Jesus showing up and providing in some of the most amazing ways and just confirming that this is what he's called Caleb and I to. So really excited to share more about that as we get in.
Awesome. Real quick, Lauren's like what, 5'9", 5'10", something like that?
5'9", yeah.
5'9". And then yeah. Caleb married a short, small girl like I married. Sarah and Jordan are about the same size, I think. But Caleb, you have a chance for your kids to be giants, I feel like.
Could be. We'll see. My dad's 6'4". And then Lauren's family, the women are all very tall, 5'9", 5'10". But, you know, I feel like life gets complicated after like 6 foot, 6 foot one. So I'm kind of praying against it. Although, yes, is there athletic opportunities? I'm like, I would kind of like my kids to be able to shop at a Target without having to get special with it.
Well, without everybody having to ask, how tall are you? Yeah, no, I mean, that's what people have to ask. I mean, if you get a giant walk around, anything over 6'4", I feel like, you know, 3 or 4 times a day, somebody asks, how tall are you?
Yes, that's exactly it. Did you play basketball? Yeah, that's our dad his whole life, so.
Okay, so Caleb, tell us about yourself, man.
Yeah, so Caleb Cook, born and raised in Southern Illinois, saved when I was about 8 years old, really just found myself in a position where I put my faith in Jesus, got to pray with a man of God, Edna Nonan, led me to the Lord's there at the stage, a little chapel church.
Nice.
Out in the country boondocks of Raleigh at the time. And I never really remembered a time where I was apart from God after that, continuing to sanctify certainly. But from a salvation standpoint, just sort of always loved the Lord, desired that my life would be His, I would follow sort of His commands, and met my now wife on the speech team at Southeastern Illinois.
That's not true. Well, go back.
To simplify.
We don't want simple.
What's the go back story? I want that. I don't want simple. Yeah, go back.
My mom brought us out to a weird country church, Pentecostal country church at some point. And she just happened to be her church out in the middle of the boondocks, literally an hour and a half drive. Honeycomb Church of God. That was where I first, and then.
He had heart shapes in his eyes, Jared.
Okay.
And then,
he knew it.
I was 8 years old at that time. And then we saw her. She came to a purity conference at Little Chapel when we were in high school. I went on a date with her. Kind of got to know her a little bit. I came home, told my mom I'm going to marry that girl. And then she started dating somebody else immediately after.
Dagger to the heart.
It was just wasn't, this wasn't the right person, you know. But then ended up on the speech team. There she is. And she has this story. She's peering through the window with Jordan Vaughn at the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing my audition. And she goes, this is so embarrassing because he liked me a lot in high school, but I dated somebody else. And blah, blah, blah. And Jordan looks at him and looks at her and says, you're going to marry him.
That
was the
very Jordan comment, by the way.
Yeah. You know,
you're going to marry her, right? It's laughter.
And then she and, you know, your wife was the maid of honor in our wedding. And I just have a ton of love for both of you guys. You guys, I mean, our history is you were the first actors in anything Kyler and I ever did in college.
Right. That's
you
right.
No, And you guys showed up and ate some cold spaghetti for us. And, I have a lot of respect for you guys. So I'm grateful.
Nice. I'm still waiting on a check for that. Is there a check coming at some point?
Need a check the mail.
I'm going to check the mail. Yeah, that's fun stuff. And yeah, it's interesting that history there. I got to meet Ed and Nonan just a little while ago because we were doing some partnership stuff with Little Chapel. And we have like a full-time evangelist now with our church. And Little Chapel has been very supportive of him outside the Murder Mills in Carbondale. And so we went over and met with the board and just talked with everybody there. Super great folks, just awesome. And but then you guys, at some point you went to Crossroads, right? So when did you guys start going to Crossroads?
Yeah, actually in college, with Southeastern Illinois College, joined the speech team and formed, a ton of bonds and relationships with folks that were over that direction. I think it was just a natural transition for us at the time. And that was where our friend group was at. Started hanging out, Jordan, Abby, that whole crew built really great friendships like Caleb Mitchell and Kim Hughes. And, a lot of them were out that direction. So we started heading to church there.
Very cool. So behind Crossroads Church is an old cemetery. I forget the name of the cemetery, but I was up at the Scroggins house last weekend at Brian's house and where Mason grew up. and I had to drive by Crossroads. And then on the way back, I stopped at that cemetery because my grandmother's, or let's see, my grandmother's great grandfather is buried there. He's William Edmonds. And I was driving through and I was wanting to get back. And I just prayed. I was like, God, I just want to see the Edmonds burial plot. I don't really want to go walking through this whole cemetery. Kid you not, man. It was one of those cool, quick answers to prayer. I looked over and there's a bunch of Edmonds right there on the side of the road. So I got up and went there and just prayed and thank the Lord for grandparents. So I have grandparents on both sides, I believe, up near North City. They grew up there and in Carmi. And then at some point they ended up moving down. But so my fifth great grandfather is buried right behind Crossroads Church. It was kind of cool. Okay, so you guys saved at early age, walking with the Lord. Your testimony seems kind of like mine for both of you, where it's like, the peer pressure for me growing up was to walk with the Lord and just never went through like a partying stage or anything like that. It was good, positive peer pressure of loving Jesus. And you grow over the years, obviously, and realize some things that you did when you were growing up probably were maybe not the greatest things, but God was, faithful. You guys go to SIU. It was SIU, right? Like that's where you studied film at SIU. So you studied film to get, what was that?
SIU for our bachelor's and my master's. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. So what got you interested? Cause you were in the speech team and everything. And Kyler, were you on speech team as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Which was a legendary speech team. Apparently you guys went everywhere. And I think if I remember right, didn't Joel Osteen get to meet you guys?
Joel Osteen? I've never heard of that. No.
Okay, it may have been a year before or after Jordan was on speech team and they went to Houston somewhere and they ended up going down. The speech team went to Lakewood and then they got pictures with Joel Osteen.
Awesome. I'll say this, our second year, so we ended up going to a Catholic church in Louisiana, New Orleans. And I always tell this story. It's one of the oldest Catholic churches in America.
What, Jackson Square there?
But yeah, I think so. And I mean, literally, man, go in and I'm just like, I've been to the Catholic church hundreds of times with my dad growing up. And I felt a move of the spirit, and the cardinal that was teaching there was so like just Jesus. It has to be Jesus. And just like the teaching and the worship card reader and somebody doing witchcraft right on the steps for Easter Sunday at this place. And I was like, dude, this place is crazy. Like literally, I feel like, this bastion of like, man, this church has seen things, just like been pumping out, but yeah, that was my church experience. So
okay. With the speech team was the Catholic church, and
didn't get to see Joel there.
Okay. I've been to Jackson Square several times. Cause like when I was growing up, we did ministry down at Mardi Gras down there. So we went on, Cafe du Monde and all that. And I know those witchcraft folks out there in the, it's like that Creole, it's not just witchcraft. It's like the little dolls. What is it that they like put needles on the dolls and stuff? What's that called?
Voodoo.
Voodoo. Yeah. It was like a bunch of voodoo stuff down there.
That's much more African craft. That is big in Louisiana. Yeah.
Yeah. Super weird. So we didn't know we were going to be talking about witchcraft here. That's interesting.
Why don't we go ahead? Opportunity there to say, and then the witchcraft person looked up and it was Joel Osteen.
Yeah, exactly. Crazy story that nobody's ever heard before, but it was true. So all right, you go to college. What drove you to get into the media side of things and get into film?
Yeah, you want me to take that? Yeah, sure. Yeah, I would say, so our parents were separated whenever we were young, and a big part of us going to our dad's house and spending time with him was watching really good movies. At the time, early 1990s, you're going through the golden era of Disney, and you're also going through really just a major renaissance of high quality art. Steven Spielberg is catching his stride in the 90s. And as a result of that, having that opportunity to be able to witness really great film inspired Caleb and I at a young age, where I think we probably watched more film than most really, really early, 5, 6, 7 years old. And so just having a reverence for great storytelling and being profoundly impacted by the greats, I would say, had a major formation. And so where possibly it wasn't, great that we went through that event, that was something that God used to be able to draw Caleb and my hearts to great cinema.
So we also, in high school, we had a class called Junior Achievement. We got to make commercials for like a product. So we had to come up with a product. We chose baller bands, like a wristband. And then we got to write and produce these 3 5-minute commercials. And we just went all out for it. It was the first time we just had collectively like a group of 40 people all like It was a Keith Kingery Productions in El Dorado. It's back on VHS, man. I mean, old camcorders, and we just went and filmed a bunch of just nonsense. But then they played all the commercials down 3 days in a row. All the TVs in the rooms would play the commercial. And there's just this buzz in school about all these were great and really fun. And yeah, I think for me, that was a moment where I was like, man, I really love this. It didn't feel like work. And it was hours and hours of hard labor to produce. And
yeah,
it was the start of it. But, you know, I was always interested in acting and performance. And so shout out Miss Paul, now Miss Kane. She had a class and she brought in the speech team. She was on the speech team previously. And then it was a theatrical interpretation. And it was Sarah, my wife, and Jordan came as a part of that. And your wife and two other actors, and they performed in front of us. And I remember sitting there in this English lit class watching them perform. I was like, what is going on? They were like unashamed. And I didn't know anything about speech at the time, but like they beat it into you to like not be worried about how you come across and like how loud you are. It's like once you perform, it's a button. Leave it all out there. It's a switch. You flip the switch and now you're in performance mode, which means everything is out the window as far as like, do you care about people? I'm just watching these four actors perform very well and very entertaining and funny and dramatic and serious and sad. And I just thought like, I've got to do this. Like I've got to get on the speech team. And come to find out, like you said, the speech team is nationally ranked every single year, top three performer for the last 30 years. And you get your school paid for, but then it's also 5-6 hours of practice a day in the room on these performances. And so, you know, you got to commit yourself to it.
You want to talk a little bit about those rooms? I just think that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, you go into these mirrored rooms and you see your profile and you see in front of you. And I mean, then people would come in and watch and they would just give very critical feedback as far as like, do I believe you? And speech is also film acting. It's not theatrical acting. There is theater portions of speech, but it's very serious. You know, you're here. The judge is sometimes 5 feet away from you, sitting on a hotel bedroom, and then you got your competitors in the hotel room, and you would perform, and it's intense. You know, very. I would go all day without eating because how stressful it was. But I was just like, man, this is really cool.
Almost more like a athletic pursuit than an arts pursuit, which created and Kelvin are very competitive anyway. I mean, we do Brazilian jiu-jitsu and I was a 4-sport athlete. He played, I think, 3 sports. So love competition, love athletics. And then we added our love for art and performance onto that to get our college paid for. So that's kind of the first stage of like God, which is really interesting. If you want to know what God's calling you to, look what he's equipped you with. Back, you can look back into your story and go, oh man, all the way back in middle school, Caleb and I couldn't get to sleep the night before church camp out at Camp Oxford skit night. Couldn't get to sleep because we were going to get to do a skit in front of all of the campers that came to this. And it's like, yeah, God had just really, there were some kids that were terrified of that and wanted nothing to do with it. And then there was Caleb and I counting down the months left until we got to perform on skit night again.
Super.
And so, yeah, I mean, just look back.
Then I get into college and I do an internship with Tennyson Tanner, who did your wedding.
That's right.
And, you know, he's insanely talented, like unbelievable. I remember just watching his work and being like, how do you do this? And of course, he was living on Red Bull and Burger King French fries.
Probably still is.
yeah. But he wasn't married, living the bachelor life. I just remember going into his house in Marion, and he's got like hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment in this small little house. And he's got this like really nice security system. But you could, from the outside, you wouldn't even be able to tell like that's what he was doing in there. But man, just getting around that and seeing what production looked like on a local level, just having the opportunity to work with him and get to be a part of filming your wedding,
it was cool.
That was really cool. And then, God just kind of kept putting the pieces together. I continued to work in marketing and production. And then there was just a certain point right around the pandemic where we decided like,
We'll get there.
Yeah,
we'll get there. This is exciting.
It is. It's very exciting. So yeah, let's keep on this rabbit trail here. Not really rabbit trail, but you go from the acting side and loving the performance side, And then what was the process of switching to more, and sorry if I don't know the lingo correctly, but it sounds like the production side. So, I mean, now that's kind of the direction you guys ended up going with it. So what was that switch like?
Yeah, for me, it really was about wanting to be able to have a salary. I mean, I knew I was not going to be an actor that moved out to LA and sought after performance. I love performance, but what I've realized is, like, I love bringing something to life with characters, and I know enough about good performance now that I can save actors on set. I can protect them. I can make them look really good because I know what doesn't look good. And so, you know, from a director's standpoint, I needed the production experience to know how to produce and know how to keep things in line with quality. And so God just put me out in the field working for 15 years so I could cut my, you know, sort of knowledge and expertise on production so that I could bring it all together as a director now. Mm-hmm. And know what I'm saying to the crew and know what I'm saying to the actor. And so I think it was a very easy step for me to transition, because acting wasn't like this thing. You know, some people feel acting as a calling and a pursuit mm-hmm. for their life, and performance is everything. I love performing. We did stand up for a few years, and I enjoy it, but I don't have as much joy out of it as I do directing,
okay.
which is putting somebody into a role and watching it come to life. You know, that's so special for me.
And Kyler, was that kind of the same for you as well?
Yeah, a little bit different. Caleb was more in the directorial seat, even as a profession. I never ended up there. I went more the creative writing route. So that was my bachelor's degree, was creative writing. And then I got my master's in speech comm and went into teaching public speaking at the college level. We both went on church plants and split up. And I ended up teaching at a local community college and a high school, English, creative writing, focusing on story, and then writing my own novels. So I got into novel writing at that time. And so in a really cool way, as Caleb was learning equipment and learning the craft on that side, I was learning story and learning storytelling and learning what makes for a really high level story, and then writing books with, you know, I think my first one had 300,000 words in it. Wow. And so to put that in perspective, that's a lot of writing. It wasn't great because I was learning, and the editing process for that was miserable, but it really taught me a lot about how to tell a really tight, impactful story. Mm-hmm. And so I went more of the creative writing. He went more into that. And then that leads us kind of to the genesis of Twin Bolt happening and the short films, if you want to go there. But if you're more interested in something else.
Well, let's go there, but give a shout out to your books. Where can people get your books, and what are the titles?
Yeah, no, I love that you're asking that. I have not published any of them yet. And it's been a process of really the editing process for me, which is something I've come to understand in the last year and a half to 2 years really well. And in that time, I've been so focused on production and on film that I haven't been on that side as much. But that is something that you can definitely be looking to see at least a film a year coming out from here on, which is really, yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So you were in Michigan, Caleb, you guys were up in Pennsylvania, and you're talking all the time still. You probably got that twin connection there, that king energy you guys both have, probably was just kind of like sending signals back and forth in your brains to each other.
Yeah. We call it twinergy.
Twinergy. Okay. I like that. The twinergy you got. Then at some point the conversation had to shift, like, hey, let's do something together. Move out here. Let's make this happen. And yeah. Twin Bolt happened. So tell us that story.
Yeah. Height of the pandemic, it really, well, coming into the pandemic, my wife was suddenly diagnosed with a pretty aggressive form of cancer. And it was, it was shocking. It was troubling. It was, she's 29, I'm 28 years old. And for the, you know, we're already having those conversations, which I think most people don't really have to have those conversations for a very long time in their life. But here we are in our late 20s. We have a 2-year-old and a newborn, and we're just trying to figure out what is this? How do we survive this? And I'm sitting with her for her first round of chemo. They said the president's coming on. President Trump announced we were in a global pandemic. And I was essentially ushered out at that point and not welcomed back into the hospital for the remainder of her treatment. And so I didn't leave my house for a full year. I did not go anywhere. So community was hard. I'm a very social person anyways. And I think what I realized was just in that period of time, like, hey, nothing's guaranteed in this life. Your relationships you have, the opportunities you have, And I just felt myself in a position where I worked at the university now for 3 to 4 years, university being a pretty liberal place, and just asking the question of like, is this it? Is this all that God is going to use me for, that I could have a safe, you know, job, work in marketing and stuff? And I think I came to the realization in place. I'd watched the first episode of The Chosen. There's a scene where Jesus speaks to Mary and says, like, I've called you by name and you are mine. I felt very specifically like that was a call to me. Like, I'm his. I'm his. He can use me however he wants. And a big deciding factor there was, what do I do about this? So I called Kyler. We started talking. It's like, let's just do a short film. I produced our first short film on $5,000 budget. Insane work hours.
Tell them how we came up with it.
Yeah, we just saved up our
OnlyFans.
Yeah, our Donald dollars and our Biden bucks. The government subsidy, you know, was God gave us $5,000 from that money. We did not have the money, and so we spent every dollar very carefully and had a lot of friends that helped out on the set and poured in, you know, exhaustive amount of hours, and put that up on YouTube, put it out in some festivals, started to get some notoriety, went back, made another short film about the life of David, and that got us more inroads and conversations like with Angel Studios. We're having pretty high level conversations with their acquisitions team, and they're essentially like, hey, you know, this theme is already taken. John Irwin is producing a David show, and I would recommend you guys not go in this route. And this was before he had released the shows, but okay, a year before. And so they said, do something contemporary, you know, do something as cheap as you can make it, but make it as high quality as possible and bring it back to us. And so that really was the groundwork for Just One More, which is a contemporary film, not a biblical, which our two short films are biblical epics in a box. And now we've produced, you know, our first feature film. And we're right at the end of that process where we're coming up to the premiere and we're going to be going live on Angel on May 14th with it. So
really super exciting. Awesome. Yeah, Jordan and I are really excited about coming to the premiere. It's going to be great. Like, we might rent a Rolls Royce or something like that to drive down there. And
go Hell's Top Hat, Kane. Like,
this is Franklin, Tennessee. So they actually have Rolls Royce just parked in the Walmart for you to take. You can.
Is that what it is? I may call up Dave Ramsey or something like that. See if he's got a car for me to borrow.
He's got three of those. Wait, he's got a Phantom for you for sure.
Yeah. So how long after, Kyler, you moved to Pennsylvania and everything was going on up there? At some point, you moved down to Tennessee, and then how these conversations? What, you get an email, a text, a call from Angel Studios or something like that? I mean, is that like hearing your song on the radio for the first time? We're like, oh my gosh, this is actually working. What was that like?
Yeah, so behind the scenes, it's just like any networking. And I think this is really helpful, not just for artists, but for business owners in general. 90% of business is who you know. It's who you know. It's connections that you make. You have to be talented. You have to be someone that can pull off the work and show up. Steve Martin has a really incredible quote where he says, Steve Martin, the stand-up comedian, actor, really prolific, where he says, be so undeniable that they can't refuse you, which is a quote that Caleb and I live by. And our excellence of our art should be the thing that's driving the conversation. But then at the end of the day, you can have really excellent art and not put yourself out there and not try to connect with the right people, and you're going to fall flat. So Caleb and I had been going to these film festivals, and anytime we're there, we're walking across the room, we're introducing ourselves to the people at the few distributors that we wanted to meet with. And someone had seen our David A. King's Calling trailer, short film, and said, I want to meet with those guys from the Angel Studios team. And we had ended up getting lunch with them after that. And it was, I want you to meet these three people. We see a lot of talent in you guys. We see a lot, you know, happening in the future for you guys. If you keep on this path, we would love to talk about what you're working on next. So we kept that relationship going and those connections going. And as we're having the conversations about, well, what are we doing next? We're incorporating the distributor that we want to work with. Okay. We're saying, what do you guys do? So as opposed to looking at it from like a pure artist perspective, which is what a lot of filmmakers do, it's not a good thing, where you say, here's my story that must be told.
Yeah, right.
Of course. And you say, hey, how can we partner with you guys and create something that's going to help you? So they said, you know, we're really trying to bring in millennials and Gen Z. We have the older audience on lock, but we don't have a lot on the platform for this younger audience. And Caleb and I went, that's what we do. Now, was it what we did? No, not yet. But but we let them know that's we're going to make, you know, our art for that category, for that demographic. And so we helped supply and demand fill a need mm-hmm. that they needed, and also made something contemporary and a version of faith-based filmmaking that has a particular voice and style that isn't currently present. Meaning, yeah. Kindred Brothers and the Irwins that absolutely crush it on the $20 to $25 million movie front, Caleb and I could not compete with that. So we had to make something in a different style and voice so that when people watch it, they're not comparing it to other films. And so it was a combination of those things and then just following up on the connections we had.
So you had that first film that was a $5,000 budget, and I'm assuming this film was significantly more. So how do you go about the funding side of things? How do you bankroll getting a large budget, paying actors, getting all the locations, the filming locations, and all that goes into that? How do you go about that process?
Yeah, I've heard it said many, many times, like any film that gets made, it's a miracle. So at this level, you just have to make what you can with what you have.
Right.
And, you know, luckily God has brought us into a place and a position where over the last 6 years, we've been having steady conversations with friends and family and relationships. And God was just kind of building the bridge to, okay, they saw the couple short films. They saw what we were able to do with very little, 5,000, 15,000. And then our first feature film was $600,000. And so to put that into perspective, though, that's not even a micro budget in a feature film category. There's indie film, which is like $2, $3 million. Mm-hmm. And then there's what we did, which is beg, borrow, and barter. And, you know, largely based off of all the relationships that I had in Pennsylvania, you know, getting all of our locations for about $500.
What we would call radical stewardship, where we're making every dollar feel like $5.
End of the day, PAs are packing trash into the back of my new truck that I just bought because we didn't want to spend $100 a day on a truck rental just to be able to take trash out at the end of the day. And I'm dumping we're working a full 12-hour day, and then I'm finding a dumpster somewhere and dumping trash and trash juice just all over my hands and my body just as I'm throwing it off at the end of, like, we just had to make it work. And, usually we couldn't have done it without the talent, the support of some of the producers that came on that have experience working at like Kingdom Story Company and these kinds of films. Our assistant director did AD work on I Can Only Imagine 2, and he built out our entire schedule. He ended up not being able to make it to film with us, but you know, we couldn't have done it without a lot of the talent and people that saw something to
God provided. God provided in some huge ways. And so shout out to those early investors that believed in us that came in. I had a buddy in high school named Kyle Griffin that had really great connections. He's in sales now in Colorado. And he was able to talk with some of the guys that I grew up with and say, hey, I don't know if you're aware of what the Cook brothers are doing, but if you look back across the projects, they're making a difference. They're highly talented. And he was able to do what he's gifted in, which is sell a vision. Mm-hmm. Then we were able to get a meeting, and Caleb and I were able to say, because we've done the research, we've done the background, you know, there's, we like to say this, there's some men our age that know every single football player, what college they're going to, what round in the draft they're going. I don't know any of that. But I can tell you exactly what productions are making what and who the top level producers are, the actors. Caleb and I often spot talent, and I could give you like five examples of Caleb doing this, but way early on in their journey, and you go, wow, that person's really special. And then 3 years later, they're in a Netflix TV show, and everyone's going, look how talented this person is. And so our gifting is kind of like being able to track and watch and have vision and wisdom for this industry. Film industry.
Very cool.
Industry. And God's given us a fascination for it and a stewardship calling on that I think is a very, very important thing. But they were able to help us raise $380,000 for our film. Needed $600,000 to pull it off. This is kind of a cool story. We started production needing $80,000.
Oh, wow.
And so we had faith that we would step into this and that people would see what was coming out of it. And they would be really excited because we had a lot of people on the fence. I want to support you guys, but I don't know what it's going to look like. Yeah. In the first 2 days, we raised that $85,000 to finish production.
Awesome.
And so it really, we said we would do it. We did it. We showed people we did it. And then they came through on their end. And so to Christians out there that are in that spot where they feel really talented, they feel like God's called them to something, but the question is like, what is that in-between awkward phase? As a church planner, you know this phase well. You kind of just have to step into it and believe in yourself and do what you know to do and trust God that he's going to come in. And by the grace of God, we've not seen major returns from the films yet, but we have a lot of indicators showing us that this is going to go very well and that our investors are going to be paid very well, that the model that we used was very smart, and that Caleb and I are going to be doing this for a long time after this. So
awesome.
Really great thing setting up.
Yeah, very cool. And what I love about both of you is there's selfish ambition that is, you can see everywhere in the world. Then there's no ambition, which you can also see. And it's kind of like the nihilism that's taken over a lot of younger men. Just, it's impossible. The odds are against me. I can't do anything. And then they just, you know, kind of sit on their hands. And then there's godly ambition, which is for the right reasons. And it's the kind of man, it's the kind of person that sees all the barriers, sees all the problems and says, we're going to do it anyways. And we're going to trust that God's going to provide. And this is what, so we're going to solve the problems. We're going to figure it out. And somehow or another, you look back and then you see, you know, look what God did. I mean, everything fell into place and there was every reason for that, for it not to. And then yeah, the moving forward, and it's the man in the arena kind of thing. There's all the excuses you could have to not be in the arena, just be on the sidelines, just play it safe. And then there's folks like you that are like, hey, you know what? God's given me a vision here. I know what we want to do. We have the ability to do it, and we're going to trust him to provide. And that kind of ambition is contagious. It's very good. Yes. And we need those kind of examples in Christianity where we're going to put our hand to the plow and we're going to get some calloused hands and we're going to trust that God's going to bring harvest here. And well done. Well done.
Yeah, that is so powerful what you just said. I've had three men in my life that are close friends that have reached out and they've said, you and Caleb have inspired me personally to follow the dreams and the visions that I believe that God has for my life. Because I saw you guys step out with young families. I saw that God has provided. And it's the power of the testimony. It's the power of seeing men walk in faith that begins to unlock that fear in us, especially culture that is very well off. American culture, most of us are very well off. There's this fear of what if I step out and I fall?
Mm-hmm.
And the really cool thing, again, I'm not saying everyone just go follow your dreams. I think there's a major wisdom component, which is look back. What has God equipped you for?
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like you're supposed to be a world star renowned chef and you're 48 and you've never run a restaurant and you don't even like to cook at your own house, major warning signal here. You have to be someone that is really talented in the sector and in the arena that God has placed you in. And
very
so
good.
In the midst of this, of what God has called Caleb and I to, he's also encouraging us in a ministry to talk to young men specifically on this subject, because we've been eyes wide open while it's been happening. We've been paying attention and taking notes, and people have been encouraging us and saying things. And it's like, Caleb, to that point that you just made earlier, almost 100 times probably in this process has gone, okay, what are the solutions?
Because mm-hmm.
you can sit and talk about all the problems. So easy. We can talk about the problems all day. I can tell you the problems with America or in my marriage or with my children or at my church that I attend. Okay, now let's move past that into how has God meant for you to solve that problem?
Very good.
Micro, which is like your local community. And then you have the macro, which is Caleb and I see a problem with faith-based cinema, or at least there's a dilemma that it's in right now. How do Caleb and I solve that larger issue? And God is kind of revealing to us a little bit, at least in the next steps, how we can do that, which is exciting.
Very cool. Well, let's break down the rest of this conversation in two parts. I want to talk about, well, maybe three. We might get there. Christian media seems to be getting better and better. We just watched A Great Awakening last weekend, or 2 weekends ago. Yeah, 2 weeks ago. It was phenomenal. And there's the caricature about Christian film that goes back for a very long time. And there's natural explanations for that. Limited budgets, limited experience, you know, the expectations of what a film is. And that kind of has built the Christian media space to where it's hard to do something that is really good, really quality. And, you know, you've got this stigma of Christian media that just kind of lingers over film. And yet everything keeps getting better and better and better to where you're like, man, this is awesome. This is not just a really good Christian film. This is like what Christians are supposed to be doing. This is being the tip of the spear. This is what media is supposed to be. And that's what seems to be happening. And I know you guys want to be a part of that, have been a part of that, and are being a part of that. So talk about some of that transition, and then even maybe into this new film that you're doing. Tell us about the new film and why you're excited about it and how you're trying to make top quality everything.
Jared, you're so right. And I think this is the part where you snapshot this for the short and you send this out and you tell the world, like, okay, so primary concern, if you are a Christian, it is that your work should be unto the Lord, which means that you're pursuing excellence in the craft to the best of your ability, right? And what you just said earlier, you got to go into the main square, you got to combat, you got to fight. The way that you fight in entertainment is not message first. So that is what Hollywood has prioritized and failed in, and people are smart. We notice you've made this film, and it's very clear that the writers had a very specific intention coming out of the film that you would agree with them ideologically. And so we've seen that in the faith circle for a very long time. And it was originally bought into. People are like, you know, I like this because finally somebody's saying the things that I want to hear. And so their levels and their standards were very low. They were willing to buy in on it. But as the message has continued to be prioritized, and we see these kind of characters, like, I'm sick of seeing the atheist that's just bitter and angry and really just a villain, a Disney villain of a character, where I myself have been in hard situations and pain and suffering. And I understand there has to be a place where we can empathize with somebody as a person who doesn't fully understand God, because what does the Bible says? Those who don't know him hate him, right? Mm-hmm. So if you don't know him yet, and Hebrews spells that out very clearly, right? Your heart is made to hate this person. And how can I come and be angry at somebody? Because that's their model, whether they've been abused in their life or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so take a huge step back and say, I want to make quality stories, things that are nuanced, good performance, good lighting, good sound, good camera work and cinematography. You've got to find the artists that can do that, right? And so luckily, as things have gone over the last 30 years, we have access to camera equipment for $50,000. We can shoot a feature film, as opposed to 30 years ago, it's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars if you even want a chance at it. And so here I am, I've met with a guy who has never shot a feature film before, and his mom just passed from cancer. And my wife is sick, and we're just meeting and praying together and talking, and he ends up being our DP on the project. It's his first feature film he's ever shot. He's 24 years old.
Josh Heiner.
And extreme. A lot of our team actually worked on A Great Awakening. And so, you know, I think we had 7 or 8 people that were on the crew for that project that also produced ours. Pennsylvania is a small ecosystem. But a secondary note there, everything is about trying to craft something that's believable. Because I want to tell a story that people aren't thrown out by poor performance or a poor line delivery or something that happens in the story that just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. I want it to be believed because I want us to be able to put our thing aside and go, I want us to engage with the characters. And, you know, another major issue is the unwillingness of Christian artists to be able to produce with a non-Christian team. So we see it with The Chosen. Dallas has had to come to the table multiple times. Guys, listen, we're hiring the best people to tell a story that I'm writing and managing and overseeing. They're listening to me day of. It's military, right? It's very military. No camera person is going to have this ideology and come to work on a set for Dallas and then immediately just do something randomly that's going to subvert, right? And so the ecosystem on a film set is very much so. I met with our actors. Some of them don't have any faith at all. But what they're saying is, who is this character? What do I need to bring to the stage? How can I make this as believable as possible? We're giving them our experience. We're helping tie them into roots in the Bible. They're watching podcasts to learn about Christian faith, to understand how to perform this in a believable way. Hmm. And their performances are stellar. And we're gaining access to these very hungry people out of California, New York, Louisiana, Minneapolis. I mean, we're pulling in from Pennsylvania, and we're bringing in the best we can to tell the story at the highest quality possible. And so there's so many different factors that tie into this, whereas Christian film, what I've noticed is there's a fear to bring in somebody who's not a Christian because, well, what happens if they do or say something that harms the film, right? What if their personal decisions...
It's real. It's
and,
a real thing.
And I think you just have to use your best judgment with that.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But at the end of
this is
contracting. I don't hire somebody to make my house because they're Christian. Yeah. I hire the best contractor, the best plumber, best electrician that I have at my disposal to come make my house that I'm going to have Bible studies in and worship sessions in. And God's going to be glorified in that house. And I'm going to be talking to those contractors and telling them and teaching them about this is what we believe in this home. And will you pray with us, right? Let's take some time and pray together. Next thing you know, you get these messages. We got a message from our costume designer. Hey, guys, I now follow the way of the Lord.
Was that that's cool.
Not Hawaii, and I'm a Christian now. And what happened there on set was so powerful, and the way that you guys led that and loved Jesus, like, just made me question.
Yeah, people got to get around genuine Christians on set.
That's cool.
It was an amazing evangelical opportunity because we got to show grace. We got to show the love of Jesus. We got to show excellence. There was a moment where there was a mistake that a particular key department leader made, and they came to us really scared. And we got to say, hey, you know what? You've done an excellent job this whole time. We're going to let that go. Keep on top of it. Let's try not to make any more mistakes, but we'll figure it out. Not a big deal. And that was like, whoa, I have been screened at on other film sets for less than this. And yet you and your brother just encouraged me, built me up, got me back to work. And so it's a really beautiful thing that we get to do. But if I can add to that, and I know that was, you probably have so much. In fact, I'll let you, because there's a lot that Caleb just said.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of want to comment on, and then I'll give my sense.
No, very good. And it's very understandable. If you're going to get brain surgery or something, you're going to get the best doctor that's there and that's available. And Christians don't believe that non-Christians have cooties. You know, we're not scared to associate with or to be around. And given those opportunities, it's wonderful that God is working and that God is using you guys in that way. And it's pretty cool. It's awesome to see that there's a marked difference between the environment that you guys are creating when you're making a film and the environment that others, when they're going out to work for another production company and they're working for them, and they're able to see the difference. And praise the Lord, that's what you want.
Yeah, I think I have like four or five things that I think are really wonderful on this topic to help both Christians in general and Christian artists with to understand. You cannot fight a battle on multiple fronts. You can't. Either your goal in your film is to make the highest quality film possible, which you've heard the phrase, the Christian shoemaker doesn't put crosses on their shoes. They make the best shoe.
Mm-hmm.
That's what reflects the character of Christ is our excellence. People look at us and they go, wow, look at that. Look at the way they put their heart into it. That is somebody that is serious about what they do. I want to learn more from that person. And the proverb that says your gift will make a space for you before kings.
Yeah. I was thinking of the same proverb, man. That's good.
Yeah. What a wonderful thing that God has promised us that your excellence will actually lead to influence and influence to impact and impact to change for Christ. And so, The multiple front war effort. You're either wanting to make the best possible film or you're wanting to beat your opposing enemies, right? Ideologically. So let's make a film that really just takes it to insert whatever your political enemy is or whatever we're going to show them, those people. Well, if you're fighting that war, then it's likely you're not fighting for the effort of really high quality content. And you said something so powerful. You said, how come is it that Christian film has always been kind of this sort of little brother to all these other art forms that are really taking the strides? Go back to the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston, 1954, at the urn of cinema, one of the highest producing box office return, highest quality content. Early Hollywood understood, make the Ten Commandments so that people can't believe how wonderful this is done. And then they made Ben-Hur after that. Two Christian films, 1954 and 1959, back to back, that in today's money would be hundreds of millions of dollars that they earned. Christian art originally, if you go all the way back to the Renaissance, we were the leaders.
Right, absolutely.
We're leading in impact cultural. If you wanted something well done artistically, you found a Christian. what happened is, I think during the postmodernism movement, where we all became, it's my truth versus your truth, we delineated and we separated from real artists and real training and real artist effort. And if you read On Writing by Stephen King, and you read what his training ground was for writing, the man was after it.
Yeah,
his
right.
Writing is second to none. And I should be embarrassed as a Christian if I'm going to call myself a writer, but not be willing to submit myself to a process that somebody that doesn't even know God is writing hours a day. And so that would be my challenge. And I'll finish with this.
I want to step in on that, what you said. So hold that thought and come back to it to the best of your ability. Yeah. This is also the dilemma. The Christian dilemma is what I call this, Jared.
Okay.
Where our competitors are all in. They're centrally focused and their God is celebrity, success, identity within the work itself. And so there is a unique battle as Christian men to continue to prioritize family, continue to raise our families to be God-fearing and desiring, while also underneath the hardship of trying to produce a feature film, which is pretty all-encompassing.
Mm-hmm.
Stress levels, stress management. And so it is a very difficult thing to do. I think it is very easy to say, I want to live a simple life. You know what? I'd love to be a pastor. I'd love to be able to show up on Sunday and teach and then meet with people throughout the week. And then I go home and I got my family. And it is military in some ways. There is a giving of self to the role that God has called you to, which is very complicated, hard, a difficult dynamic to address, because also it's putting you in a place where pride is something you have to fight against. You have to fight against arrogance. As somebody striving for excellence in what you do, it's very easy for people to start to raise you up with their opinion, and they flatter you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which can also be something you struggle with as a pastor, right? You get a lot of people that just sort of commend you all the time. And so it is a very difficult line of work to do well at all. You know, most people, you know, I had a man that came out to SIU while I was in school there. He was a gaffer, and he had done 150 A-list star, high-level Hollywood films. Somebody asks, how do you balance family? He goes, you don't. You don't have a family if you get into film. He said, film is whatever the gig is. And if you try and get family, you will be divorced. Your children will hate you. That was his blunt, straightforward advice. Don't get a family. And everybody in the room, you know, Southern Illinois, well, I want a family. It's hard. And so to Kyler's point, excellence, but also you have to battle against, you have to fight for a balance where Jesus is still leading your heart and your life. Why am I doing this? What do I want from this?
Mm-hmm.
We're already praying and talking about, okay, we're at the premiere. We've got 400 people there watching our film. What's the goal? The goal has to be that God is exalted.
Yeah, right.
The goal has to be that we fight against personal feelings of, you know, being, you know, self-grandizing or those kinds of things. And it's something that you have to be careful with, because gotcha. The enemy comes to kill and destroy.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. And keeping all of that in mind, yes, it's complicated. And certainly things are less simple, but the goal is impact, right?
Mm-hmm.
God is calling. And we see it all over the Franklin, Tennessee area. Christians from all over the United States are moving here because God is calling them here. Mm-hmm. Many of them saying, kind of like Caleb and I, we don't even know what's next, but we know that God wants us here and he's doing something.
Okay.
And you're exactly right. The catch-up is about to occur, meaning you're going to start to hear about some creatives that are coming out of the Christian worldview, Christian strong theological perspective, that are going to be competing at a very high level in entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's acting. I believe that's going to be film. I believe it's all of that component, because God is raising up people to go to war for impact.
Yeah, that's good.
And it's for Jesus. It's this is art. And so we didn't get to get too much into it. You want to talk about the film a little bit?
Yeah. I was wanting to finish things off. Just tell us about the feature film and then what you can tell us about it. And then where can people see it?
Awesome. So the feature film is called Just One More, which is a title my wife came up with. And it's a double entendre, because obviously with it being, it's a film about struggling with opioid addiction. And so with that addiction struggle, you think just one more. It's about this person that's struggling with taking just one more pill. But in reality, and the really beautiful double entendre is, it's a film about a gentleman in Texas that found out that he had stage 4 lung cancer. He had 45 days left to live. And instead of going through aggressive treatments and trying to prolong his life, he sat in his front yard and he ministered to his community for the rest of his life, for those 40 days that he had left. And his prayer constantly was, Jesus, let me see just one more saved.
Oh, wow.
And so we combined that powerful, almost brave heart, go out on your shield anthem of a man, true masculinity. I trust that God has me, that this is my time, but I'm going out doing war.
Yeah.
And we had that story with a real story of my wife's cousin moved in with us when she was 18 and she was struggling with an opioid and a marijuana addiction. And Jesus radically saved her over the course of a year and a half. And so getting to be front row, seeing Jesus in that little 620 square foot apartment shape someone and change their affections for drugs to himself. We wanted to do a really beautiful, in-depth look at what does that look like for somebody who's struggling with hard drug usage as Jesus is with their affection? And what are the setbacks? What are the relapses? What are those moments where, whenever you're dealing with someone like that? So the goal was to, two parts, train the church for older people to know and understand your best days are not behind you. Use this month, I'm going to go out and I'm going to have an impact on my community. God could use you more miraculously than he ever has. 70s, 80s, 90s, doesn't matter. God still keeps. And then also to let people that are struggling with drug usage know, hey, the church is a place where you can come in and be loved. Don't be afraid of these righteous people, because so once were some of us.
Yeah. Amen. Very good. So then people are interested. Where can they see it?
Coming out on Angel Studios app, their streaming app, on May 14th. And so that I don't have an exact time, but probably in the evening that day.
And if you wait and you use the provided link that we're going to come up with, sign up for Angel using that link, it appears that you're going to the Angel website to watch our film specifically. And that creates some momentum on marketing dollars behind Just One More. So if your audience could hold off on getting that and wait on that link, that could be amazing.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll put a bunch of these links in the show notes then. And anything else that you guys want me to put up, I can do that as well. It's been a ton of fun, guys. It's been long overdue, but I'm glad we finally had this conversation. And tell people where they can find out more then about Twin Bolt. I'm sure you got a website, social media, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're on Instagram and YouTube at Twin Bolt Media. If you search that, you'll find us there. The Instagram is Cook Brothers Twin Bolt Media. And so that's where we're giving all of our updates. And that's where we would steer people as our audience is growing, is to those two locations.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, guys, this has been a lot of fun. We've been talking to Caleb and Kyler Cook from Twin Bolt Media. Guys, I appreciate it.
Love you.
Thank you.